News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. It's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on your Tuesday. Thank you all for letting us have a little time off, and that we enjoyed a great deal yesterday. So Sean and Tina and the group here allowing us a day away from the job, and I'd like to say that I am refreshed and ready to go.
Good.
I'd like to say that, but I can't. anyway, Quinn Hillier with the QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner is with us. Quinn, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Hope you all are too.
Yeah, you know, I have people like to say that, boy, that revved me up, that extra day. Mm-hmm. That extra day just wanted me to get a second extra day, actually. But anyway, we're on the job, and good to have you here, Quinn.
Well, thanks a lot. I was just talking just before I got on. I was talking with Leanna saying, I want not a 3-day weekend. I want a 30-day weekend. Why can't you make it happen?
Yeah. it's called retirement, Quinn. That's what a 30-day weekend is.
There's people trying to push me into that, Quinn, and I'm resisting, actually.
Let's talk about some of the goings-on over the weekend, and we'll get into some sports as well a little bit later, and the character of one particular golfer this weekend. But let's talk about the tragedy, and it's been an 11-month tragedy, honestly, in the Middle East. This weekend, you had IDF forces in Gaza closing in on where they were hoping some live hostages were.
Yeah, there's basically rescue attempts.
Yeah, and it appears Hamas just straight up executed six of these hostages they'd been holding. These weren't deaths that were, you know, months old that the IDF had just discovered. I mean, this happened, they're thinking, 48 to 72 hours before Israeli forces closed in. One of those hostages, shot and killed, I think a shot to the back of the head, was an American-Israeli citizen. And there's been a massive response, of course, in Israel, where the hardliners who want to keep the war going as is are in one corner, and you have others who want to bring a complete end to the war for possible negotiations for these remaining hostages, and they're going at each other. Here in America, Biden, fresh off of a 2-week vacation, he kind of turned it on Netanyahu some over the weekend.
Yeah, he was asked if Netanyahu's doing enough to get the hostages out or to get a ceasefire, and he said no. And then he said, we're going to issue an ultimatum to both sides, a take-it-or-leave-it ultimatum. Why are they issuing any ultimatum to the Israelis at all? The ultimatum should go, in fact, should have gone 10.5 months ago to Hamas and Hamas only. What is Israel supposed to do? How can you negotiate with murderers, thugs, demons like these people? Every time that a ceasefire has been on the table, it's been Hamas who walked away, not Israel. I mean, I could go on and on, but the worst thing is there are American hostages there. How often have you heard Joe Biden even say their names? Maybe
no.
3 or 4 times?
No, I don't know.
11 months. Uh-huh. He should be saying, Hamas, you just killed one of ours. And he did say, we're going to come after you. He said it 10.5 months too late, and I've been writing this for 10.5 months, that he should be going after Hamas. But he did issue finally a strong statement saying, Hamas leaders, you better watch out. Where's the action? Why hasn't there been action in 10.5 months? Why has everything out of Joe Biden's mouth for 10.5 months been, oh, of course we condemn Hamas, but that Netanyahu's bad? Because that's what he does. He always has sort of a throwaway line about Hamas, and then he focuses on how bad he thinks Netanyahu is. You know what? Netanyahu, if Netanyahu didn't have to sort of curry favor with Biden, he should tell Biden where to stick it, and it wouldn't be pretty.
So a poll released yesterday by the Jerusalem-based Jewish People Policy Institute found that 49% of the Jewish Israelis that it surveyed supported Netanyahu's position that Israeli troops shouldn't leave the Gaza-Egypt border, even if that meant there would not be a deal to free the remaining hostages. 43% thought troops should leave the border to facilitate a deal. And, of course, there have been big protests Sunday night, last night as well, Quinn.
Yeah, I mean, the people in Israel have a very, high level of emotion for obvious reasons. Well, Joe Biden doesn't have that excuse. Joe Biden should be looking at this and saying, the only reason Israel is there is because of Hamas, and the only people that keep walking away are Hamas, and the only people who keep violating all norms of human rights are Hamas. Of these six hostages, three of them reportedly were on the next list to be released. They thought whether they were rescued or not, they thought that three of those would be released in the next week, and yet Hamas brutally kills them.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't Netanyahu's fault. This is Hamas, and the U.S. should have SEAL teams ready or whatever. We should know where Hamas's leaders are, and we should take them out.
Yeah, and how about the ones that are in Qatar? I mean, you'd think that would
be
a place you could get to pretty easily, since that's where the negotiations are going down. Also,
exactly.
Quinn, talk about the fear or the lack of fear that the Biden administration and Harris are putting into these Hamas militants. I mean, the family, I think it was the parents of the American citizen who was killed by these Hamas animals, what's his name, Hirsch Goldberg, they were just at the DNC not that long ago. I mean, they were one of the big speakers at the DNC talking about bringing the hostages back and their family, and then it's their son who Hamas executes. I mean, I'm not seeing any fear from Hamas over Biden policies.
None whatsoever, and that's the point. Look, Biden has actually, just like he's done in Ukraine, he has limited the sorts of weapons or the uses of the weapons that Israel wants to use. Actually, this was the weirdest thing of all. Several months ago, Israel wanted to use more precision guided missiles so they could minimize the damage to supposedly innocent civilians. And Biden was angry that so many civilians had been killed, so he says, you can't use these American-made precision guided missiles. Well, if you don't use the missiles, then you end up killing more civilians because you have less precision-guided stuff. It made no sense. Biden should have said, yes, use these missiles instead of these others. Please take these missiles and go after just the bad guys. It's unbelievable how badly Biden has handled it. Oh, but he did send a pier that cost us $320 million
mm-hmm.
that barely delivered any food. The food it did deliver was mostly stolen by Hamas instead of given to the people. And then, as predicted, the pier was broken apart by bad weather. Yeah, that really helps.
Too. Yeah, and three U.S. service members injured during that entire process. Also, that's Biden we're talking about here. Let's talk about Harris, who is now the Democrat nominee. And
you mean Harris?
Harris. Is she changing her voice up a bit depending on what rally she's at? We'll have some audio on that lately. Later. But looks like she's flip-flopping on another issue here, and this being Israel. You had Ro Khanna, the Democrat congressman from California, on Meet the Press Sunday. And after Harris declared, I think last week or the week prior, that she fully backs Israel for the most part, Khanna is saying that Harris may attach conditions to aid for Israel. And this comes after, I think, the UK said they're going to cut back by about 10% on their arms sales to Israel. Harris has publicly previously affirmed Israel's right to self-defense, but now possibly saying there will be conditions to aid for Israel if she becomes president. What are your thoughts on that?
She is even worse than Obama in terms of Israel. Look, the reason we didn't get the Abraham Accords, where with Israel signing sort of non-aggression pacts with five Arab nations, the reason we didn't get it 5 years earlier is because Obama was in office and he kept scotching the deal. But Netanyahu was already putting that together. That's how bad Obama was. He actually stood in the way of peace. Harris is even worse. If you go and parse her statements, she isn't just, oh, of course I condemn Hamas, but Netanyahu's bad. She's a little tiny, of course I condemn Hamas, and then she comes out strong with five sentences about how Israel must do better and Israel must not abuse human rights and blah, 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 blah. She is objectively anti-Israel, and which is actually one more reason for Israel to be much more aggressive now rather than less, because they only have a small window, as bad as Biden is, in terms of not supporting them. If Kamala Harris gets in, Israel knows she'll be even worse, and she's going to cut the legs out from under them.
So do you think that would accelerate their aggression, considering that
accelerate the aggression now because their time period for getting anything done is going to be limited if she gets in. In other words, if you've got objective A and they know that she's going to cut their legs out from under them to get to agenda A, then they need to get agenda A or objective A done sooner.
Quinn, I'll let you answer this text from Gene, who I think referring to the ICC, says 143 countries say that Quinn doesn't know what he's talking about. BB is an indicted criminal and will go to jail very soon. Your thoughts on Gene's text there?
BB has been indicted. He has not been convicted. He is not likely to be convicted. Caroline Gleck, who granted is a very hardliner in Israel, but a very, very smart journalist, says that the case against him has basically fallen apart. Meanwhile, the rest of the 143 countries, I couldn't give a good flying bleep. There's a lot of anti-Semitism out there in the world, and that's all that is anti-Semitism.
Are you accusing Gene of such anti-Semitism?
No, I'm saying the other 140, I don't know what Gene is.
None of us do, Quinn.
All due respect to Gene, but those 143 countries, a lot of that is anti-Semitism.
I'll take it from people who have been getting texts from Gene for quite some time. Easy on too much respect.
8:19, Quinn Hillier joining us here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit of golf, but not so much, Scottie Scheffler's amazing season, which you wrapped up with a $25 million check on Sunday, but a little integrity in the game. It is the game of integrity, right? And one golfer showed that over the weekend. We'll get into that with Quinn when we get back.
Dalton, 823 FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Good to have you along. 251-343-0106. Shoot us a text. Feel free.
Yeah, and continue our conversation with Quinn Hillier. You can read his work at the Washington Examiner, also quinnhillier.com, and sign up for the newsletter. Let's talk some sports here, Quinn. And while a lot of the world, a lot of the country focused on college football, NFL season starting soon, wrapped up the PGA season over the weekend. What a year for good guy Scottie Scheffler, who wrapped it with a $25 million paycheck by winning the Tour Championship. He won $62 million on course this year. That's more than Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas have made in their careers in on-course earnings. And he's now second in career on-course earnings, just behind Tiger Woods, and Scheffler only about $25 million behind Tiger now. Some unbelievable stuff there. He has great character, I believe. Let's talk about another golfer with some character, and it actually cost him over the weekend, Sahith Theegala, who took a two-stroke penalty in a bunker. Quinn, talk a little bit about this.
So the rule is if you are in the bunker and before your forward swing you disturb any sand right anywhere in the vicinity of the ball, you could have improve your lie. Mm-hmm. And if you improve your lie in a bunker, that's a two-stroke penalty. Well, he was in a sort of a funny lie, and so there was a ridge of sand behind his ball, and as he took it back, he says he didn't even feel himself at the sand, but he thought out of the corner of his eye, he thought he saw a few grains of sand, mind you, only a few grains, move on his back. So he hit his shot, and he immediately called a rules official over and said, I think I moved some sand. What's the ruling? And it's a two-stroke penalty. Now, nobody else saw it. Not only did nobody else see it, but when they played the replay over and over and over again, slow-mo, it is impossible to see any sand move. And so he could have easily said, well, I'm not sure. Can we check the video? If the video doesn't show it, you tell me what to do. No, he said, I am more than 90% sure that I moved some sand. Maybe you can't see it on the video, but I'm pretty sure I did. And I can't go to sleep at night if I am not honest about it. So he basically called the two-stroke penalty on himself. And you know what that did? It cost him $2.5 million. The difference in that two strokes was the difference between him being either tied for second and being third place alone. And because of these crazy large paydays, the difference between tied second and being third was $2.5 million. He has just shown that his integrity is worth more to him than $2.5 million. My hat is off to him. What a wonderful example of sportsmanship and of integrity. And it's something that we've been seeing from golfers for decades and decades and decades, but he's the latest. And he had video evidence on the other side, on the side in his favor, and he still said, nope, I don't care what it shows.
Yeah,
admirable.
He had a heck of a round going, too, and if things had shaken out differently, could have been in line for that first place finish if he'd really went on a Sunday run. But you said this brought up memories of you of a young golfer named Ben Crenshaw back in the day. You said gave you a lasting lesson in sportsmanship.
Yeah, it was either 77 or 78 at the New Orleans Open. I went to both of them. I can't remember which year was which, but he was playing a very, very early morning round. There were only like four of us there. He hit a ball in the trees. It was on some twigs and some leaves. And I'm standing 5 feet from him. He hit his shot. I went off down the fairway to see Tom Watson. And I didn't see any ball move, but apparently he thought he had moved the ball when he touched a twig or something. He called a penalty on himself. Again, I'm standing there with my own eyes 5 feet away from him. I didn't see the ball move. There's no cameras there. Nobody in the whole world would have known that the ball had moved, but he called it on himself anyway, and I'm 13 or 14 years old, and A, it made me a big Crenshaw fan, but B, it taught a real lesson in integrity and sportsmanship.
Boy, on the opposite side, you got the behavior of a women's tennis star and a ball girl at the U.S. Open, and she kind of caught it for that. I'm not going to try to attempt her name. I know she's a pretty big player on the women's tour. She's from
Italy?
Kazakhstan.
Oh,
she
okay.
was playing Paulina Close. From Italy. She was playing Paulina from Italy, but did you see that video, Quinn?
It was awful. I mean, look, I've been a ball boy at a professional tournament, and you're so excited to be there. You're trying as hard as you can. You're around these famous people, some of whom you really admire, and to this, I don't know why she was angry. Maybe the ball didn't get there fast enough, and the ball girl went to throw her the ball, and she just let it go, and she stared at her, and she threw another ball, and she stared at her and let the ball roll away, and she just glared at the ball girl, and the girl's there trying to give her another ball. It was horrible. It was rude. It was telling the whole world, I am too good for this ball girl, and she didn't have the ball for me exactly when I wanted, and I'm going to make her look terrible. Well, you know what? She didn't make the ball girl look terrible. She
made herself look terrible. Yeah, and the booze rained down, by the way. You can find that video. The crowd was not impressed with her demeanor. Quinn, thanks a bunch for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. It was a good heel move, though. You need heels in every sport.
Oh, yes.
People to root against.
She performed that beautifully. She was losing the match. I think she eventually lost. I think she was just in a sour mood about all that.
Yeah. Well, they always make the ball girls and boys look incredibly stupid out there. So, I don't know. Maybe
good
it was
job.
A reaction to that. More Mobile Mornings after this.
8:30.
Good morning, 8:35. FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. It's Tuesday, and it's time to head over to McConnell Automotive, where we talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing just fine as the calendar turns to September here. Hopefully the weather will be turning towards September as well. It's been a hot one. What do you have going on at the lot at McConnell Automotive today?
That's right. With getting into September, hunting season right around the corner, man. We got a bunch of four-wheel drive trucks and four-wheel drive Yukons out there. Got some low interest rates on the new Sierra sitting over there. I think it's a little 1.9, not too bad. But, yeah, we got some great deals going on. You can check everything out online at McConnellAutomotive.com. And like you said, we're going to be here all day. Looks like it's going to be a nice day. Hope the rain stays out, but I know we need it. But we're going to be here, so come by and see us.
Yeah, also let people know that you're buying cars as well. Of course, trading in and all of that. But you'll straight up buy it from customers. What do they need to have on hand?
All they need to do is bring the title. A little, well, when you bring the car by here, we'll look at it and give you a price right over the telephone. All you got to have is a title and a tag receipt, really, mm-hmm. when you want to bring it by here. But if you want some kind of idea, just give us a call, 251-476-4141. Give us the miles and the VIN number, and we'll try to help you out right over the phone.
It's that easy. Thank you, Louis.
Thank you.
Louis Arata, you'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and their website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
By the way, follow up on the tennis player that was so mean to the ball girl.
Yeah.
She did put out a statement. Her name is Yulia Putsaneva, something like that. I think I did it pretty good, even though I'm probably way off.
Yeah.
I faked it good.
It's all about confidence, Dan.
That's radio, man. So please bow. But she did say this. I want to apologize to the ball girl for the way I was when she was giving me balls. Honestly speaking, it was not about her. I was really PO'd at myself for not winning the game from the break point, and then got empty with my emotions and deep in my thoughts that I was not even focusing on what was going on and who gives me the ball. All the ball kids do amazing jobs always at the Open. So she apologized. It looked like she was showing her up there. If she just was kind of blanked out. She was so upset. It's an emotional game for sure. You're in the middle of the game, and I don't know that you're always thinking about etiquette in the middle of competition.
I don't watch much golf. I mean, much tennis until it gets like to the semifinals and finals of these big major tournaments. But was it the British Open or maybe the French Open? I think it was a top male tennis player who accidentally absolutely destroyed a ball boy in the face with a tennis ball.
Ooh.
You remember that? They like turned and trying to knock it over there and hit him in the face, I think.
Yeah, I guess that was an incident that was unintentional, though, was it not?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you got to be ready for anything when you're a tennis ball boy,
hey,
right?
So I've got a quick story from my day as basically the same. I've ranked the same as a ball boy. The NCAA tennis finals were always in Athens way back in the day because they had this big tennis stadium and they could accommodate all the teams and individual players. For a year, I'd say for a year and a half, I worked at the Ramada and I checked teams in, you know, mm-hmm. teams. I checked everybody in, but teams were among them.
You were the bellboy.
I was behind the desk.
Okay.
But the thing about the team sports, those guys were all great. They were all basketball, football. They were all part of a team, so they didn't feel the need to be out of line.
Yeah.
And so
they could go with the flow, is what you're saying.
I saw a kid that played at Ole Miss that caught a fly ball of mine in Little League in New Jersey.
What?
He ended up going to Ole Miss as a player.
Yeah.
And so I was like, hey, man, how's it going? He's looking at me like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, why did you steal my one hit that I almost had that year? Anyway, so teams, when we checked them in, they were good to go. When the NCAA tennis came and you had these players – they're on a team, yes, but they've made their lot basically as individuals.
Right.
I don't know that the same was true of golf. I didn't feel it with tennis. You could feel them looking through you like you were nothing. And there was a guy from, and this may be very unfair, this is something that happened 40-some years ago, I guess. Tim Mayotte ended up to have a good career in tennis. He was out of Massachusetts. He went to Stanford. He played at Stanford. And he was I was his ball boy. He just looked at me like, look, man, like you're, you don't really, I'm about to win the NCAA champion. He was just a jerk.
Really?
And then another kid came along, pretty much same story, and he was big smile. Hey, well, why don't you come and watch me play today? He played for Stanford as well. When I go to watch this kid play, that now I like him.
Yeah.
The whole place was booing him. He was, as nice as he was off the court, he showed, he was bratty on the court.
Ah, okay.
So he was a nice kid, but when you put him in the middle of that competition, he kind of went sour. So I thought that was funny. Like, I came to root for you, man, but you're embarrassing me. Now I've got to go. Because I was the one person in the thousands that was, you know, actually rooting for him.
Yeah.
So his behavior turned out was very nice in the lobby, very bad on the tennis court.
Oh, you know, and this is a heck of a segue, but what a lot of these spoiled, bratty tennis players remind me of with low integrity are politicians. I think we see that well, day that, in and day out.
There's something to say to that, because politicians very much their own. They've got the machine behind them.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about them.
All about them.
They need to win. They need to win. They've got all this support around them. There's something to that.
Yeah, and there was a lot that went on over the weekend. How much of it makes a real difference come November, I'm not sure. You had more folks going after Tim Walz, including his older brother. This was, I saw this
Facebook
on Twitter.
Post?
Yeah, so I guess he'd been posting for some time, and they dragged back some posts from last year. So before Tim Walz was on anyone's radar for a potential national candidate.
Yeah.
And his brother, I guess they haven't spoken in 8 years. His brother despises him and said, you know, he was talking to, I'm sure he'll get some book deal or something like that, like we've seen from so many Trump family members. And, mm-hmm. and you keep going back, you know, Obama's brother hates him. They always have family members that hate him. Seems mm-hmm. either side of the aisle. Was it Kinzinger, whose family completely turned on him after he went anti-Trump?
He went anti-Trump, and they were like, to a Kinzinger family member, he was not invited to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and then we saw the same thing with RFK when he endorsed Trump, and he already had family members dropping off left and right during his presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. But then when he went Trump, they like, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. But yeah, Tim Walz's brother goes after him. Also, Megyn Kelly interviewed four members of the Minnesota National Guard. None of them had anything good to say about Tim Walz.
See, I would have thought that you could, that those people were probably out there if his behavior, you know, I mean, his actions seem to indicate that, yes, he was in the National Guard. Thank you for your service and all this. But there's not every National Guard member or military member is the same. They're not all the same guy.
Right, right. Yeah. And one of them called him a serial liar, I believe. None of them had anything good to say about him. So Tim Walz was catching it from all angles over the weekend, including at the, which you and I have been digging in, this Minnesota State Fair. How long does this run?
We got to go to the fair.
I think it's a 2-week, feels like it's been months long.
I know.
But I think he was there or he was somewhere and asked about the hostages being executed by Hamas. And right when he was asked about that, his handler goes, oh, time to go. And he's holding an ice cream cone or something. He's like, all right, bye-bye. They said later that they didn't hear the question asked.
Yeah, I saw that report that it seemed like he blew it all and he didn't want to say anything. And as it turned out, and this was probably true, he didn't hear it and he came back and made a statement
about
the hostage.
A statement that I'm sure they poured over and looked to make sure there were no nothing that could upset anyone, right?
Yeah.
Kamala Harris, her new move is to, when she's getting on to her plane and leaving her motorcade, she's just got the iPhone earbuds in now. She doesn't even try to hear the press shout questions at her. She does the, I'm busy, I'm on a phone call, like so many of us have done over the years when you don't want to talk to somebody.
Man, I do it on my walks all the time.
Yeah. So, but she did have some campaign speeches over the weekend, and we've talked previously, especially when she was in Georgia, about her accent changing depending on the crowd she's speaking in front of. She put on that southern drawl when she was in Georgia. Well, here she was in, she had two events yesterday, one in Detroit, one in Pittsburgh, both to unions. She was speaking to some union workers here. Here's Detroit. See if you can spot the difference. Kamala Harris in Detroit yesterday.
You better thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time. Because what we know.
So she goes, you better thank, right? And then here she is, same exact speech, different state, talking, union members. This time she's in Pittsburgh. See if you can spot the difference.
Thank unions for sick leave. Thank unions for paid family leave. Thank unions for your vacation time.
So, clear differences there.
Could it be the one was addressing predominantly one race of people, and another was addressing a different race of people?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Possibly. I mean, one was in Detroit, one was in
Pittsburgh. One sounded almost like it was in a black church.
Right.
I mean, the way she was, you know, it was the cadence she was using.
Yeah, and, you know, it's nothing new for politicians to do that.
Right.
I mean, we talked about Hillary Clinton doing that in the past. Remember she went on The Breakfast Club, and she was talking about how she loves carrying hot sauce around in her purse? It's like, yeah, okay. Republicans do it, too. You know, you have the, they'll show up, maybe take a Mitt Romney, who was born in a suit. He's worn a suit his entire life, and then he shows like, and then all of a sudden he's wearing a denim button down with the sleeves rolled up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. So you've got the preschool Mitt Romney in a suit,
yeah,
with the other kids climbing trees and everything,
like Boss Baby, right? He's a businessman from the beginning, but then he shows up somewhere and he's wearing work boots that are chafing his ankles and a new denim shirt that he's rolled up. Trump. He's pretty much, and maybe there's some that don't change at all, no matter where they go, but Trump is Trump. I mean, you see him show up at a Chick-fil-A in Atlanta, and he's speaking the same way as if he's in, you know, doing a speech in San Francisco,
yeah,
or if he's in New York.
Harlem.
Harlem. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's pretty much the same all the way through as far as his tone and demeanor and everything.
But you're right. Did Republicans do the same tricks of the trade? I think it was Paul DeMarco years ago running up in Birmingham, what he got in trouble for, but it had to do with who ended up beating DeMarco. DeMarco's now out of office. He's often with Jeff Poore on the Jeff Poore Show, mm-hmm, as a former state rep or senator, whatever he was at the time. Anyway, he took a clip out of
context.
Out of context completely. Everybody knew it was out of context, and his handlers put it in his advertising. And he was questioned about it, and it was part of his demise. To lie in his advertisement by taking a clip of his opponent saying one thing, everybody knowing it was too blatant.
Yeah.
And politicians seem to just be willing to do nearly anything to get the job.
Yeah. I think that's clear, right? And speaking of which, Trump, I think, had a pretty big policy statement over the weekend. And between him and Kamala, it almost seems like, you know, they're just trying to buy as many votes as possible. You know, Trump, as many things as I like about him, and you know I'm a big Trump fan, spending is still a major issue with Trump. Mm-hmm. He's not the fiscal conservative that so many Republicans are. Problem is, the fiscal conservatives can't win elections. They've made that pretty clear over the years. But now he's talking about making IVF treatments free nationwide. And I know a major push on this from the Trump side of things is trying to make the abortion issue not an issue for, mm-hmm, November. We saw it destroy Republicans in the midterms after Roe v. Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court like a month before voting for the midterms.
It was a calamity for the midterms, basically.
So Trump, he still insists for abortion. And remember, he put the Supreme Court justices on the court that helped overturn Roe v. Wade. He's always said he wants abortion to be a state issue. I think he was talking about Florida specifically, where he said he's in favor of a 13-week ban. That upset a bunch of pro-life supporters.
Yes.
But also keep in mind, a lot, and many of you are completely anti-abortion, no matter what, from 0 weeks on. And that's been such a big issue that's brought Republicans to the polls over the years. But there are a lot of grifters that grabbed a hold of that movement and now are pushing that they're not going to vote for Trump because of his stance on abortion, mm-hmm, which he said should be left to the states. And he thinks 13 weeks, I think, is what he said. But a lot of these people, once Roe v. Wade was overturned, and they're the head of these massive NGOs that have made millions of dollars on the backs of pro-life supporters over the years, well, that funding for them is going away because Roe v. Wade is going away. And they haven't done enough of a good job in states to make abortion laws what they want to see them, whether it's 6 weeks or 0 weeks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're pushing back against Trump because he's kind of kept the same position, his policy position of his, where it should be back to the states. Well, then he steps into IVF here, which Democrats have been trying to make an issue since that ruling here in Alabama.
Yep.
And he actually said Thursday that he promised no strings attached access to IVF treatments. He said either the government or the insurance companies would pay for IVF. He said, we want more babies, which I agree with. But for everyone to get that needs it, free IVF. Lindsey Graham actually spoke about this on Sunday on Meet the Press. Here's what he had to say about Trump's IVF policy that he laid out on Thursday.
I would support a tax credit, means tested, kind of like we do with children. That makes sense to me to encourage people to have children.
But you wouldn't support this idea of mandating insurance companies to cover this, would you?
No.
I mean, you've already voted against it.
Because there's no end to that. Yeah, there's no end to that. I think a tax credit for children makes sense, means tested. And I think let's look at that concept for people trying to have a child.
Okay,
that makes some sense to me. I'll talk to my Democratic colleagues, so we might be able to find common ground here.
I have no problem with IVF, but you start looking at the prices of this, and if insurance companies did cover this, of course, premiums would go up for everyone else. IVF treatments cost between $15,000 and $20,000.
Those are very expensive.
Per cycle. Yep. They said in 2021, more than 400,000 procedures took place. You can imagine how that number would skyrocket if it was subsidized, right? So does that hurt Trump's numbers at all? I don't know. I think maybe it helps because it's kind of taking that issue off of the table for a lot of moderates who would vote against the Republicans for IVF or their stance on abortion. But I thought an interesting move from Trump on Thursday.
Let's hear from the text line. What do you think about Trump's move there? And Lindsey Graham talking about more Americans should have more kids. He's not exactly Grandpa Walton. It's 8:52 on FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton. It rhymes with Walton.
It does, doesn't it?
It just rolled off my tongue there. We've got a little bit of football to get to before we get out of your hair, and then Jeff Poor's on the way next. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Jeff Poor Show on the way. The aforementioned Paul DeMarco is going to make his way on the show.
That's right. Hour number one. Hour number two, Jeff will talk with Dale Jackson from WVNN, a Florida Gators fan. And John Wall, the ALGOP chairman, scheduled to be on with Jeff in the third hour today.
Okay, so we're all analyzing football over from the weekend. Roddy White looks like he just broke it down, the former Atlanta Falcons wide receiver. He played at UAB, but he took a shot at the Clemson Tigers watching them against Georgia. Mm-hmm. Their offense stalling out time and time again. Might have had to do with the fact that Georgia is very good on defense. But Roddy White saw it differently on X.
Oh, what did he see?
Quote, Clemson got way too many white dudes on the field at one time.
Ah.
So Roddy White says, too many white dudes.
Isn't that kind of Clemson's recent, that's kind of been what they've been doing, right?
Well, yes.
Not intentionally. They've had some great athletes.
And some white guys are pretty good, too. Number 13, Clemson was hoping to beat Georgia. They did not. Just to clarify, Bulldogs quarterback Carson Beck, a white man, threw two touchdowns in the second half, one to London Humphreys, who is also white, and he used his speed to pull away from black guys. Just saying.
Yeah,
Cash Jones, a backup for Georgia. He's a white guy. He rushed for a touchdown, stiff-arming a black guy on the way in.
Wow. So
Georgia won the game 34-3, but I thought it was. I think what Roddy White was trying to say was Clemson doesn't have the team speed that they used to have.
Okay.
Maybe he's saying that. But some white guys are very fast, too.
Yeah.
Just saying. So you might not want to just dump it all on.
So a swing and a miss from Roddy there, you think?
I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's all. It's not just a swing and a miss, but it's what would the opposite bring?
Man, I think this weekend, great for our area. I mean, you start with Ryan Williams, the Hollywood show on Saturday.
Just as good as he was in high school at the college level.
He is. And then Perry Thompson, who's now an Auburn Tiger, former Foley Lion, had a big touchdown reception.
Oh, yeah.
He looks great. And our guy Riley Leonard, taking care of business, first game as the Notre Dame quarterback. And didn't have a huge night on the stat sheet, but when it mattered, he came through in the clutch.
He won the game. He was the reason Notre Dame won on the road.
So cool.
Yes.
See these local guys go on and do great things.
Agree. 8:59, Jeff Poor on the way.